Out this month is a book that takes a communal look at a history that has long been buried. 400 Souls collects the work of 90 writers, historians, poets, journalists, novelists, and activists to tell the story of Black Americans from the arrival of the White Lion, which brought slaves to the colonies in 1619, to the Black Lives Matter movement. Here's an excerpt of a chapter written by Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones on the arrival of the White Lion.
The story of the White Lion is classically American. It is a harrowing tale, one filled with all the things that this country would rather not remember, a taint on a nation that believes above all else in its exceptionality. The Adams and Eves of Black America did not arrive here in search of freedom or a better life. They had been captured and stolen, forced onto a ship, shackled, writhing in filth as they suffered and starved. Some 40% of the Angolans who boarded that ghastly vessel did not make it across the Middle Passage. They embarked not as people, but as property.
Scholars Ibram Kendi and Keisha Blaine are the editors of 400 Souls, and they join us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Ibram, I know that leading up to the 400th year, you had been thinking a lot about this. It's basically the symbolic birthday for Black America. And you were thinking about how to take that on in a way that could live beyond the actual year. How did you come up with this idea of using multiple voices to tell these stories? You call them a community choir.
I wanted to figure out a way in which a creation, a product, a book, could not only write history, but be history. And the more that I thought about it, the more I realized, well, what if we brought together a community who would write that history, but then 100 years from now, 200 years from now, people looking back at the 400th year would be able to say, well, this is what Black folks were thinking and even remembering at the 400th year mark. And so that's why we're so proud of 400 Souls, because it doesn't just write this 400-year history, it actually makes history.
Mm. These chapters that each writer takes on are over a few-year period, some of them just a page or two, but together they make up what is the first single-volume history of Black folks that we know of. Keisha, you two set out together on this quest. What was this process like for you to sit so deeply with these volumes about real people who helped shape our country? I mean, these are stories that in many cases have been denied for a very long time.
You're absolutely right. I think it was really a moving experience just going through the process of working with the authors and reading the pieces. And even though we're both professional historians, I think we were equally surprised by some of the narratives that the writers wrote, because what's amazing about history and certainly about Black history is that there are always new stories to uncover. And the writers were able to center just a diverse array of historical figures, and they grappled with so many topics that remain relevant to understanding American politics. So it was a moving experience and certainly an exciting one, an opportunity to bring together a community to tell the history of a community.
One place where history is murky is in the telling of stories of Black people who were enslaved, which means many of these stories in this book will be new to readers. I mean, stories of rebellion beyond Nat Turner, stories of resilience, but more than anything, they really showcase the humanity of Black people. For instance, in the chapter Slave Market from 1714 to 1719, writer Sasha Turner details how enslaved Black children in New York were frequently sold to neighbors and friends, to business associates, because there was a different calculation on labor than in the South.
The type of structure that Keisha and I instituted for this book, where you had 80 writers write 5 years each of African-American history, amounting to 400 years, what that resulted in is the bulk of the book, nearly 250 years of it, being a narrative or stories when Black people were enslaved. And I wanted to emphasize that, because typically that's not how it's done. You know, we want to get past slavery quickly and then sort of talk about Reconstruction and the history up to this day. And so in a way, it, you know, we had so much space to tell the stories of Black people over and over again. And you just learn from those stories that these writers told that that these people were deeply human, and that was that humanity that was pushing for their freedom.
Hmm. Keisha, you touched on this, but there is definitely a through line in bringing the past to the present, meaning we can clearly see in so many ways how these past events show up in the present. I mean, this sounds like it was intentional. It wasn't just a byproduct of putting together this collection.
You're absolutely right. It was intentional. And in fact, when we gave instructions to each author, as they were just in the very beginning of crafting their essays, we made it clear to them that we wanted them to grapple with the specific 5-year period, but to also be thinking about how the particular topic connects to the present moment. And even when a writer does not explicitly talk about, 2020 or 2019, it's clear that they are thinking about how the history shapes the present moment. And we wanted each essay to connect with the reader in a powerful way. And that was just one way to do it, was to make sure that each author thought carefully about past and present as they were writing.
Mm-hmm. They are the traditional chapters of written text that is divided into 10 parts, and each part concludes with a poem. Ibram, you all knew very early on that you wanted to have poets to write poems. Why was it important to have poetry in this collection?
Well, you know, as you shared earlier, in many ways, this community of writers and their many individual voices, you know, came together as almost like a choir. And of course, if you're going to have a choir, you got to have some soloists. And so in many ways, the poets really served as those soloists at the end of every 40-year period, where they were able to really take those 40 years and really recapture them in verse in all their sort of complexity. And so we just thought it was important, you know, to have that. And as Keisha always sort of explains it, in many ways, it gives readers, you know, a break to even reflect, you know, on what they have read through the poetry.
Mm-hmm. You know, I asked Keisha what the process of producing this book was like for her, but I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Ibram. How has editing this book changed you?
I am just sort of amazed by just the incredible creativity and brilliance of Black writers, and it just really, you know, I think by working with so many writers on the same project, it just reinforced the beauty and brilliance. And so I have been changed in the sense, because if I entered into this product just loving the writing community that I was a part of, you know, now it's like I can't be disconnected from it, because I'm just so over the moon about, about the writers and the contributors of this text.
What about you, Keisha?
Well, the book really captures beautifully the power of community. And I was reflecting on this a lot, particularly around March, you know, in the process of putting the book together and editing the pieces. Every single one of us, I think, just had our lives turned upside down with COVID-19. And I remember just those few weeks of being at home and not having access to my office, not being able to go anywhere, and feeling a sense of loneliness, which I think many of us felt, but working on the project at that same time and knowing that I was part of this larger community, it just gave me, I think, strength. And it was emotional to think about it, because here we were going through such a painful moment individually and collectively as a nation. But the project was in many ways a lifeline. And so it just transformed my thinking about community. I've always valued community, but now we were able to come together and reveal to the world that you can tell a powerful story about Black history, but wow, look what happens when you bring 90 brilliant Black writers together to tell that history. It's truly magical.
Hmm. Keisha Blaine and Ibram X. Kendi are the editors of the new collection, 400 Souls. Thank you all so much for your work in this conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, going forward a few centuries in this book, cultural critic Bakari Kitwana writes in his essay, The Hip-Hop Generation, about the emerging hip-hop political voice of the 80s and the significance of groups like Public Enemy, known for their socially conscious lyrics, like this song, Bring the Noise, which samples the words of Malcolm X.
Yo, Chuck, you tell me to- Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal thief. Public Enemy number one, 5-4 said freeze, and I got numb. Can I tell them that I really never had a gun? But it's the wax that the Terminator X bun. Now they got me in a cell, took my records they sell, cause a brother like me said, well.
To read an excerpt of 400 Souls, a community history of African America, 1619 to 2019, go to hereandnow.org. And a special thanks to Penguin Random House Audio for providing us the sound of Nicole Hannah Jones's reading of Arrival.
Out down on the avenue, a magazine or two is dissing me and dissing you.